Hello, and welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program, Jeff Bishop, who's Category Manager, Transportation and Logistics Procurement at Molson Coors. And today we're going to talk about profiles and transportation management excellence, Molson Coors' success with drop and hook. So if you're a transportation executive, you're always looking for ways to reduce costs, improve service, satisfy customers, and help the business meet its strategic and financial objectives. And there are many ways to reduce waste and improve inefficiencies in transportation management. And in this latest installment of Profiles in Transportation Management Excellence, I'm excited to welcome Jeff to the program to share how Molson Coors, in partnership with Uber Freight, is leveraging drop and hook to drive continuous improvement and business benefits in its transportation operations. So with that, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Adrian. Great to be here. Appreciate the invite.
Great. Well, I think many of our listeners are probably very familiar with Molson Coors and enjoy many of your fine beverages there. But so probably no need to provide an intro to Molson Coors per se. But what about your just to provide the folks some perspective in terms of your role and responsibilities there. Why don't we just start there?
Yeah, that sounds great. So I've been with Molson Coors for be 13 years and a couple days here. And so multiple different roles in our supply chain operations, kind of management side over my career. The last most of it being in the transportation realm of our business. Last couple years, as some people might say, I've went to the dark side, and I'm in our procurement team now, right? So I got to be the bad cop when it comes to transportation. But my team in particular, we are in charge of all of our North American spend for truckload, intermodal, dray moves. I also have a number of other categories, so spotting and shuttling services that we use at our breweries to move trailers around. I also have some fleet management as well, so leases, purchases of fleet. We don't own really anything in the United States, but up in Canada, we have a number of tractors, trailers, and spotting vehicles that we directly lease.
Yeah, well, obviously, I mean, a company of the size of Molson Coors, and just with what you shared there, a variety of different transportation modes, certainly a lot of complexity and dynamicism in the operations there. And we're kind of in the summer season still here, which is peak shipping season for many beverage shippers. And a few weeks ago we had the 4th of July holiday, which is the biggest holiday for beer in the United States. And summer's not over yet. We still have a few short weeks here, depending on where you live. I'm here in the Boston area, so we're kind of seeing kind of the early signs of fall already, but we're clinging on to summer for as long as we can. Maybe briefly, I mean, how has this year been for Molson Coors so far, particularly from a transportation standpoint?
Our sales over the last couple of years have been really good. We've had some really big summer selling seasons. We did a great job last year in terms of transportation, of making sure we got the product out to meet all the consumer demands. As you mentioned, 4th of July is the biggest beer selling holiday of the year, so that's kind of our Super Bowl. We've actually had a really good year this year as well. And so we've kind of over the last few years changed our philosophy a little bit as a company, to make sure that our customers, so our distributors, because we use a three-tier system, we go directly to a distributor. We've pushed them to have a little bit higher inventory levels going into peak season. In the past, it was more of that kind of seasonal curve where we would ramp up in March really hard, April, May being our biggest shipping month of the year, and then it would kind of stay plateaued through August and then kind of come back down again. We learned that any type of hiccup that we might have in terms of production in off-peak, we would never have a chance to catch up. So we've pushed our distributors a little bit harder to make sure they have higher inventory in that off-peak months, to make sure that when we hit March, April, May, anything that happens on production volatility, that they have plenty of product available to hit those peak months. From a transportation standpoint, as everyone knows, the market's pretty soft right now. So we haven't had a lot of problems finding capacity, but we've done a pretty good job.
Yeah, no, certainly it's been, anyone who's been in this industry for some time understands the cyclical nature of the market. And certainly, the past year and a half has been kind of more favorable to shippers such as yourself. And I think it just in your comments, I think it underscores the fact that, how transportation, inventory management, demand, the interrelationship, of all those things. And obviously working with partners, right? Kind of having to have a collaborative nature with distributors in terms of, trying to create win-win scenarios for everyone involved to expect the unexpected sometimes, right? And I think some of the unexpected things, although it could be expected, is weather. It's certainly been a hot summer here in the Boston area. If you look at my electric bill, with the air conditioning that we've been running all summer, it's definitely higher than average. And there's been record-breaking heat, across the U.S. really throughout the summer. I mean, how does that, these heat waves and perhaps hotter than normal seasons, impact sales and operations for your team?
Yeah, so it definitely adds a layer of complexity for us during summer. Beer is more susceptible to heat than probably any other point in the year, right? So we want our beer getting out there as fresh as absolutely possible. If someone opens up an ice cold beer on a beautiful day, you want that to taste like it just came off the line, was just finished being brewed. And so, having beer sitting in trailers when it's 110 degrees outside for weeks on end does not play well to beer quality. Now, I would say our products hold up pretty well to heat, but still, we want to make sure we get these things, get this product there as fast as possible. So, with the extreme heat that we've had, it really puts a lot of pressure on our operations team. So, we have an entire load control team that, especially during summer and extreme heat, that they are monitoring our shipments, every single individual shipment, to make sure that, number one, once it's loaded and on our yard, that it's getting picked up timely. We don't want things dwelling for a long time in the yard. And then once it's picked up, we want that thing getting delivered to our distributor ASAP. So no going to another drop lot somewhere, and letting that thing cook. So it puts a lot of extra manual work on our team to make sure that type of stuff happens.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you don't normally think, and it really isn't, beer being a kind of a perishable item like, milk or eggs or something like that, or baked goods. But you're right. I mean, everyone wants to have, that fresh taste, in their beer and whatever beverage they have. And being able to flow that product through the supply chain as efficiently as possible is key there. So, I mean, you've highlighted some of the challenges here, particularly with the heat and kind of the different layers of your supply chain. I mean, what are some of the ways that you work with partners? And I know you work with Uber Freight as one of your partners to kind of overcome and address some of these challenges.
Yeah, so I would say a couple things we started looking at a little bit closer over the last 2 to 3 years is providers that also can give us reefer equipment. So we don't have a reefer requirement for our product, but when you have extreme temperatures, both summer and winter, having a temp-controlled trailer or container really does help, right? So we've definitely looked for partners that have the option for both dry and reefer that maybe we can switch on and off, and we have added a number of those in. We also have a number of reefer providers that we have contracted just as dry, that it's a backhaul for them. They might be hauling meat, and now they're using those trailers to go back to wherever they came from with beer on them. And so we've been able to kind of connect those dots and start working with those providers to say, hey, you do have a reefer unit on this thing. We don't normally use it, but maybe we can start turning these on while they're sitting or in transit to make sure that we're keeping that beer fresh. Uber Freight, right? We've been using Uber for a number of years now, and they've come up with a solution with PowerLoop. So PowerLoop is a drop trailer solution for us. We, as a shipper, are extremely drop heavy. So probably 80 to 85% of our shipments go out on drop equipment. And that is just because there's a lot of volatility in our production. So just in time, we are not make to stock, we're make to order. And our warehouses at our brewery probably hold a day to 2 days worth of inventory. That's it. So anything happens within that production, and you have a driver that shows up as a live load first, let's say, last thing we want is to make a driver mad that never wants to come back to one of our facilities. So we're very drop heavy, and Uber has been a good partner for us in terms of both the live load side and on the drop side now with their PowerLoop option.
Yeah, that's a great point in terms of you hear a lot about being a shipper of choice for for carriers. Probably it's important all the time, but that becomes particularly important when capacity is more constrained and carriers are more selective in terms of which shippers they want to work with. And so certainly keeping in the good graces of carriers and the drivers is important. So how long have you been using this drop in hook strategy and working with Uber Freight? And I mean, ultimately, how is it integrated with your operations and your
Yeah.
strategy?
So drop and hook has been our big strategy, I would say, well before I was in this role. Like I just mentioned, volatility in our businesses is a given. And so production schedules change constantly. And so we need to have that drop equipment available so the brewery can keep loading and make sure we get product off the floor. Uber, we've been doing business with probably since I would say maybe 2018-ish, 2017. And they came in, it was right after they started the Uber Freight segment. So I might have the years wrong there, but it was maybe a year or two after they started the Uber Freight segment. And they came in and overnight became a core carrier for us. And so really pushed hard. They got in, they had really good service. And at that point in time, it was mostly live load. They did offer some drop options. And so we have a number of, as I mentioned, we're drop heavy, which most people think lends to more on the asset side, which it does. But we do have a number of brokers like Uber that act like asset players for us. So they will actually, in our RFPs, bid as drop, and they will come in with options for us to have drop pools at our breweries. Now, if you think about it as a broker, that definitely adds complexity for our brewery if they have a number of underlying carriers, because they might bring in a trailer pool of 10 or 15 trailers, but that could be from three or four different underlying carriers. And so putting that onus on the brewery or that broker to work with the brewery to make sure that, trailer pool A is only going to these locations and trailer pool B is only going to these locations, it gets messy. And so as I mentioned before, that's where this power loop option, and I think some of the other brokers are starting to kind of follow suit on this, is these universal trailer pools, right? So you are a big broker like Uber, and they now have leased equipment that has their name on it, and it is universal. So they were able to provide us a trailer pool in our Albany, Georgia brewery, which is where we're starting to kind of grow this out of. And all they're doing is brokering the power for us. So we can bring those things into the door for any Uber load that we need, load them up, and they're finding the power to move them. And with a company as big as Uber, they have the connections with a lot of different trucking companies to make sure that they're getting power for us timely.
Yeah, that's great. And I know that that's been an area that they've been investing in for a number of years now, and kind of we're a leader in that space, if you will, in terms of from a brokerage standpoint to kind of provide that kind of service. And I assume that visibility is obviously very important. Whenever we do surveys with our Indago supply chain research community, for example, that are comprised of supply chain logistics executives, about their priorities, gaining real-time data and visibility almost always tops the list. Can you speak to the benefits of real-time data and visibility, and how has that been valuable to your operations?
Yeah, so these trailers that I mentioned, the power loop trailers that they have, these things are state of the art 53-foot trailers that have real-time GPS tracking on them. And as I mentioned before, as our load control team is continuously monitoring these loads during extreme heat, extreme cold, being able to have access to that type of data, which we can get through Uber's portal, we're able to go in and see exactly where these trailers are. It's definitely helpful for our team to kind of make sure that we're tracking where these shipments are. If something claims it hasn't shown up, we can see, yes, it's been there, it has not been there. We've definitely used some of that data to help us during these extreme temperature times. We also started partnering with Forkites over the last couple of years, and requiring our carriers to do tracking throughout the sequence of the shipments. So we're getting that data loaded into our TMS. So real-time data has, over the last 3 or 4 years for us, become a key component of monitoring our carrier's performance.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things, particularly after the pandemic, when I've talked to executives, I think one of the where data comes in is many executives say, we need to become more data-driven in our decision making. And I think this is where things like, GPS data and sensors and, we talk about the Internet of Things, we've been talking about that for quite some time, but I think the technology is finally there, over the past, maybe more recent years, to be able to gather that data, be able to supply it in a more real-time basis, via TMS, and then have the systems in place to be able to do that kind of analysis that helps you and drive continuous improvement, to see where the opportunities are, where there might be delays, or there might be opportunities to make some strategic changes or process changes. That's great. So let's shift gears a little bit and kind of look a little bit ahead towards the future now. I mean, as a beverage shipper, I mean, what do you see as the biggest opportunities and concerns in the freight market, right now and heading into 2025?
Yeah, so opportunity-wise, I think one of the things that we've had as a really large initiative on our end is sustainability. And I think shippers around the country are really starting to go all in on sustainability. So I think in the next 2 to 3 years, we're going to see a lot more around that. So alternative fuels, we've seen a lot with electric vehicles right now. I know there's still a lot to be seen there in terms of infrastructure to be able to support electric vehicles, but alternative fuels. We're also really big on our mode diversification. So that's something as a company that we historically we've been extremely heavy truckload. We are trying to get more into the intermodal space. We're actually pushing pretty hard there. We're also really big into the rail boxcar piece, and that's something kind of historic from the legacy Coors side. We currently lease 400 insulated boxcars that we ship out of our Golden, Colorado facility, as well as our Elkton, Virginia facility to a number of our distributors. But so in that term, I would say there's a lot of opportunities in kind of mode diversification and sustainability that I'm kind of looking forward to. I think we'll transform the business and the transportation industry in general.
Yeah, that's a great point. Obviously, transportation is a big contributor of CO2 emissions, and obviously, your product, just by its very nature, it's a very heavy product. And I think one of the things you're seeing is there's various regulations that are in play right now. We'll see if they ultimately get enacted or not. But I think that is driving ship. That's another driving force for shippers. To putting the processes and the systems in place to start looking for more sustainable ways to move their product and to talk about data. We talked about data before. I think that's what I'm seeing a lot of companies start to do as well, is be able to track and start measuring CO2 emissions to their shipments, because that's kind of the baseline, right? To say, hey, let's create a baseline, understand where we are right now from a CO2 emission standpoint. And then as we start doing implementing some of these strategies like you talked about, like perhaps going from truck to intermodal or to rail, you can now then see the deltas between how you were doing it before towards now these more sustainable options. So as a way to wrap up, Jeff, any words of advice or lessons learned you want to share with shippers who are looking for ways such adding ways such as adding drop and ship to their strategy to better navigate today's transportation market?
Absolutely. And I also forgot to give you my challenges, so I'll make sure to give you that. In fact, we can jump back to that if you want. So I
Sure.
gave you my
Let's do the challenges first, and then your words of advice for others.
So I gave you my opportunities. I would say challenges in terms of the market. I mean, everyone knows there's a lot of uncertainty right now. We know things have to tighten up at some point in time, which, I mean, as a shipper, we've enjoyed the soft market, but we know it's not sustainable, right? It's forcing companies out of business. I think many shippers would agree with me that if we had our way, we would prefer that everyone had kind of the even market where we are paying a consistent rate. We're not worried about these giant peaks and then giant valleys. And I think carriers would agree with that as well. So I know we're at the bottom of the market right now, and like I said, it's a positive for our checkbook, but we just know it's not sustainable. So that to me is the biggest concern over the next couple of years is where is that going to head? Are we going to see these giant peaks? I'm hoping that it's much more subtle than what we saw, back prior to COVID when things were a little bit more stable and not these giant ups and down waves. So
Are you doing any kind of, more frequent procurement as a result to kind of stay in line with the market, or any kind of like index-based rates and things like that? I mean, those are some of the things I've seen other shippers at least talk about.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. So, what we're currently doing and what we've done for probably the last 8 years or so, we call it a 1+1 market. So we go through and we do an RFP every 2 years, which we're coming into our network RFP here at the end of this year. And in the off year, so would be the end of 25, we go back to all of our carriers and say, hey, based on your specific rates, we'll do market data on their rates and where they're at, up or down. Are they, even with what we think the market's at, plus what do we project the market's going to look like the next year? We'll go back to them specifically and say, hey, we're proposing a X percent increase or an X percent decrease or flat. And we'll negotiate back and forth. And if we come to a deal, they get to keep their lanes for the next year and we move on. And the goal is 100% incumbency. And then if we do have a carrier, we just can't come to agreement on in terms of what they are expecting versus what we're willing to pay. We'll put their lanes out to bid. And it's usually, the last one we did was only like 2% of our volume. But and historically, it's been maybe 10% at the most. And it's not saying that those carriers are kicked out and they get to bid on their lanes again. And it's just a true market test in our eyes.
Right.
Now, index-based pricing you brought up, that is something we've talked about because I think that's it's a lot of work running RFPs, and we know that there's a lot of changes that happen in a year or within a couple of years, and so we're starting to talk about it. I wouldn't say we're ready to pull the trigger on it yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if we got at least somewhere to that point in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think overall we're still in the very early stages of that, but I think at least the conversations are starting to happen. And I think we'll probably start seeing more of that, particularly now because there is so much visibility to data to what's happening in the market. And a lot more benchmark data available and so forth. So I think, both shippers and carriers now have access to the data that they can, use and come to agreement perhaps on some kind of an index or some kind of way to, try to maintain, some, like you said, try to smooth out those big peaks and valleys that have historically defined the market. So anyway, now let's talk about the as a way to wrap up. Let's talk about some of the words of advice you might have for other shippers who are looking for ways, including drop and ship. I mean, drop and hook to their strategy. And are just getting started with it.
Yeah, I mean, drop and hook, in my mind, is always a win-win for both the carrier and the shipper, right? It allows the flexibility for the shipper to load when they need, as long as there's trailers available. And it also allows that flexibility, and you're not wasting drivers' time as a carrier, right? So they know loads are loaded, they're coming in, they're picking up, and they're out the door right away, versus hoping that the product's available when they get in there to pick up. So drop and hook is, I don't ever see that going away for us. Matter of fact, I wouldn't be surprised if we try to grow that even more, yard space is being our biggest constraint. But the other piece that I would say that we lean really heavy on as a company is relationships. So we are, in fact, I had a carrier tell me this last year that, on the spectrum of transactional and relationship based, we're very heavy on the relationship side, almost, in their opinion, almost too far. But that's the approach that we've always taken as a transportation team at Molson Coors. We have a number of carriers that have done business for us for 40, 50 years, and we're not bringing in new carriers every year to just get cheap rates, get their foot in the door, and then burning them out and kicking them out and bringing someone else in the next year to try to keep our budget low. We know that relationships long term are going to serve us best and make sure that serves our customers best. We need to make sure we get beer to our distributors on time. So I would say leaning more to the relationship side, in my opinion, is probably the best advice that I could give. And that's whenever we bring in a new carrier, we tell them the same thing. We are extremely relationship based. We expect them to weather markets just as we will. We are never a company that go back to a carrier if the market drops and we have contracted rates. We don't go back to carriers and say, mid-contract, we want you to lower your rates. But we expect the same in return. And the carriers that have been very successful for us understand that, and they know our relationship will eventually pay out over time, right? So, and it should pay out for both of us.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. I mean, I think we say it often that this is a relationship, business, but not everyone walks the talk. with regards to that. And sometimes it's very tempting, to kind of sacrifice long-term partnerships to kind of get that short-term gain. But I think time and time again, in all aspects of the business, not only in transportation, but just in any kind of supplier-buyer relationship, when that happens, you ultimately pay the price one way or another in the long term. Either that supplier or a carrier goes out of business, or they have short, they have long memories and they remember how you didn't treat them well on the downside, and now they're looking for payback. So,
Absolutely.
relationships definitely are a key thing, and it sounds like you're doing a fantastic job on that. So, Jeff, again, thank you for making the time. I know you're busy. I know we're still in summer, like we said, and it's still a busy time of the season for you guys. And but congratulations on your success to date, and thank you for making the time to be with us and share your story with all of us.
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me.
Great. I want to thank those of you that had joined us. If you're watching this episode on demand, either at the Uber Freight website or on Talking Logistics, and you've got a question for Jeff, post it there, and I'm sure he'll be more than happy to respond via that medium. Again, thank you for joining us, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.